From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for August 26, 2022. The Brewers are home, first with the Cubs, then with the Pirates before heading out of town. The Packers are off, getting ready for the regular season opener with the Vikings. And at the lakefront this weekend, it's Festa Mexicana. The Japanese government has a problem. Their kids aren't drinking enough booze. And no, I'm not making this up. Since the pandemic, revenues from alcohol taxes have plummeted. And to make up for the shortfall, the government is running promotions and video games to get kids to drink. And that includes drinking in the metaverse. How crazy is this? Who's going to spend real money on virtual drinks? Well, the Japanese could learn something from the Germans. A Munich brew pub has found a novel way to beat Europe's cooking oil shortage. They're letting customers pay for their beer with sunflower oil. And we know cooking oil is mandatory if you're going to fry your schnitzel. And speaking of alcohol, we have a brand new festival to talk about. It's the Jepson Malort Fest. It celebrates a liquor that's been described as tasting like sweaty feet. But it's all the rage in Chicago. Ray's Growler Gallery in Wauwatosa is hosting this event Saturday, and you can't see I didn't warn you. A Canadian company needs to hire a few candy tasters. The job pays $78,000 a year, but it also requires that you eat at least 100 pieces of candy a day. Well, that $78,000 just might cover your dental bill. We have breaking news out of Madison. Oscar Mayer is introducing popsicles that taste like hot dogs. Oh, hell no. And finally, don't mess with this kid. A two-year-old Turkish girl was bitten on the lip by a snake. Her response? She bit it back until it was dead. When she's old enough, I can only imagine what her dates are going to be like. On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Steve Giles, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. A tough week overall, made tougher by a pretty significant sell-off Friday. The NASDAQ down 4.4% this week, closing at 12,142. The S&P 500 down 4%, closing at 4,058. And after a 1,000-point decline today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average actually down 1,009 points today, closed today at 32,283. That's down 4.2% for the week. For the year, the NASDAQ down 22%, including dividends. The S&P 500 down 14%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 9.9%. You know, Dave, I think no better place to start this week than Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve. We were talking right before the podcast today about how it seemed like with some of the economic data released this morning that Friday was going to be an okay day. And then, you know, you get to Jay Powell's comments just a little bit into the start of the morning, and all of a sudden the market took a pretty significant turn. You know, not a lot of news really there, and yet all of a sudden investors are, I think, a bit worried about the direction now that we're headed.
Kyle, it's amazing what 10 minutes at the microphone can do to markets broadly today. And I think you're correct. Powell didn't say much different other than he kind of added the word pain into his speech about combating inflation could involve some pain at the household and corporate levels. But to your point, really not saying that, yeah, we're going to introduce a much more aggressive path here. We're going to aggressively change our targets. Really no real numbers to back up anything that would change from their standpoint. So kind of interesting reaction by the markets overall.
And Steve, of course, you know, we look at things like FedWatch tool to get an idea of what does the market think interest rates are going to do. We look at the 10-year and even the interest rate market, not all that significantly different than, you know, what we were seeing. And so despite the fact that maybe the stock market sold off, the expectations in the bond market, not all that different.
Yeah, that's right. The 5-year and the 13-week T-bills are only up slightly today, Kyle, which I think is suggesting that, you know, the investors can't expect to have it both ways. The bond market is telling us one thing and the stock market is telling us another. I guess we'll find out which direction the market goes the farther along we get into this.
Well, and I think that's key, right, is this kind of difference between what bonds are telling us and stocks are telling us can only last for so long. At some point in time, you know, if the Fed really is going to have to make significantly more rate increases, you would expect that that is going to have an impact on consumption. It is going to have an impact on families and businesses. And so, you know, I think need to be clear that that's the intent, right? That's why you raise interest rates. You're trying to slow it down. And so I guess I understand where the stock market's coming from. I guess I understand why maybe things are a little bit more tempered in the bond market. You know, but again, Dave, we look at things like earnings forecasts. Not a lot of change there in the last couple of weeks. We took a little bit of a step back, you know, maybe from the end of the last quarter to where we are now, but still pretty reasonable forecasts for growth.
Kyle, exactly right. I think, you know, we're kind of coming off of that. We had that July bounce where we had the inflation numbers come down. Everybody got a little rosy, I think, on their expectations on how quickly this was going to turn around. And now, you know, we've seen kind of a snowball effect with pessimism. But like you said, when you really look at the underlying fundamentals and you look at, first of all, look at our labor situation in the country, unemployment is still at 3.5%. And those corporate earning numbers are holding up pretty well. We're looking at some estimates in the 8% range for the balance of this year and 2023 with something similar to that. Those two things together are certainly not flashing recession. You know, things can obviously change, but it's difficult for me to get my arms around this recent bout of pessimism to the level that it's at right now.
And to add to that, Dave, the news this morning that the core inflation rate had come down to 4.6%, I think it shouldn't be swept under the rug here. It's signaling that the Fed's actions in raising rates up to this point has been working. If we maintain our patience with respect to Fed rate policy and returning to their more neutral monetary position, I think inflation is not going to be part of the conversation a year from now. Obviously, the frustrating part is getting to that point a year from now. But that core inflation number, I think that the Fed likes to hang its hat on, which does exclude food, it does exclude energy because they're more volatile, is showing us that what they've been doing up to this point has been working. And I think that the takeaway here is we just need to maintain some patience and let the Fed do their job.
And Joel, we're going on, you know, really 9 months now or even closer to a year of what had been pretty significantly high core personal consumption expenditure increases. And, you know, the number, the print year over year for July is back to the September number. That's meaningful for a couple of reasons. But to me, most importantly, it's meaningful because now the comparisons start to get more difficult. And so as you're looking at year over year numbers, now we're talking about a point in time last year in which we were already starting to see some pretty meaningful increases.
Yeah, Kyle. And even if you look at the numbers that the PCE index without the core, which, you know, year to year makes sense because over time the core and the year to year for the PCE pretty much equal out. And I was doing that today. And remember that the Fed has had a target for a long time of having 2% inflation. Well, you know, here we are, if you take that the non-core PCE number, we're at 6.3% year to year, and that was 6.8% last month. So there's an improvement there. But if you look at the longer run, not just now, I mean, right now we're around 40-year highs, but if you go back even 5 years, it's just 2.6% on average year to year. And again, they're trying to get to 2%. You know, over a longer time, and they haven't, and I just use that number to illustrate, they haven't been at that target for a while. It was like pulling teeth for them for years to try to get it up to 2%. So, you know, yeah, we're still at that 40-year high or near that 40-year high, and we saw a little progress in July, but there are other things going on, and Chairman Powell, you know, referred to that in his news conference today about that the economy is still pretty, you know, and Dave pointed out some of the factors. It's still fundamentally got some strong attributes to it, and we don't have to worry as much about recession as people were fearing, I think, you know, even a month ago. And that gives the Fed more leeway, I think, to continue raising interest rates.
Well, and let's touch on that recession bit for a piece, because I think there's this kind of rule of thumb that so many people look at as kind of the two consecutive quarters. We know from conversations we've had on this podcast, things we've written in our newsletter, that the technical definition of a recession is maybe a little more nuanced than that. I know you get a lot of arguments out there right now about whether we really are or we really aren't, but we got news on a second revision to the second quarter GDP number that, you know, at least continues to paint a picture of an economy that has some more nuance to it than just strength we're seeing in the employment.
Right, that GDP number was looking at the second quarter, and it was stronger than it was in the preliminary estimate. It still had a negative number to it, but that's looking at an annualized rate. So it's basically, I don't know if this is a fair analogy, it's like catching somebody during a sprint and you're timing them, and then you're figuring out how fast they would be running if that was a marathon, which doesn't seem to be fair. The way I like to look at it, which I think is a little fairer, is even looking at it from year to year and measuring it that way. And if you look at it that way, the economy was still growing in the second quarter. But that's kind of parsing the stats there. The fact is, though, that in 2020, when we had our last recession, it was declared that it was a recession based on two main things. One was industrial output, and the other was employment. As Dave pointed out, our employment is actually pretty strong right now. It's, you know, the last measure was 3.5% unemployment. That's the lowest since 1969. And industrial output is still pretty good. We had numbers this week on durable goods orders, and it was slightly down. It actually, they reported it as 0.0, no, unchanged from the month before, but it was slightly up a little. And it's, you know, year over year, it's up, what is it, 11%. So, you know, our industrial output is still pretty strong. And those two things alone suggest that we're probably, I mean, we might be in a recession, and we're going to be in, we know we're going to be in a recession again, but, you know, we're still pretty strong economically. One other point on that is that when we do get into a recession, one way to get out of recessions is to what? Lower the interest rates. And if our interest rates are at zero or near zero, as they were before the Fed started raising the rates, we wouldn't have that option.
Yeah, we've talked about the Federal Reserve needing to have some more ammunition, right? Some more opportunities to have an impact on economic growth. Should we get into a situation down the road where we need to stimulate economic growth? And when you're at or near the zero lower bound, there's no opportunities from traditional places. And so you turn to things like quantitative easing or qualitative easing, things which have built the balance sheet, certainly of the federal government, but also which have had an economic impact. You know, we've got other places now where we seem to be turning, things like this student loan forgiveness, an interesting report from Goldman Sachs talking about what the actual economic impact of that is going to be. They seem to think it's going to be fairly inconsequential. And so while the headlines seem pretty big, the headlines seem pretty scary, and that hundreds of billions of dollar number seems to be somewhat substantial, you know, I think, Dave, worth pointing out that potentially from an overall economic impact, while this may help consumers, while it may help folks paying for student debt, it probably doesn't have the same economic impact that a lot of people think it's going to have.
Yeah, and you know, I think that I read that article too, Kyle, and they did point out accurately that a part of this is also the ending of the forbearance of payment for everybody else that has been enjoying not paying back their student loans. So people that don't qualify for forgiveness have to start writing the checks again. So they said that's also going to, you know, kind of normalize the impacts of that as the cash flow starts back to the government, and it'll also decrease the consumer's ability to spend. So it's kind of a negating factor at that point.
One X factor there, I just sort of wonder if people who are having loans forgiven are going to be spending more. Because that's what helps our economy. You know, 2/3 of the GDP is driven by consumer spending. And in that report, again, today, consumer spending was slower, but it's still going despite everything.
Joel, I think that the loan forgiveness is absolutely going to help the individual household. I mean, consider that we're all talking about the GDP economic impact? I mean, what about the household budget impact? 90% of borrowers earn less than $75,000. If we talk about middle-income households, household earnings between $51,000 and $82,000 is considered middle income. And a $10,000 forgiveness on a loan, that's a huge part of your budget. That's a huge part of your budget.
Well, and I think we need to be clear that consumer spending is 70% of our economy, right? That is the lifeblood of what keeps our economy ticking. It keeps our economy growing. And so if you're talking about a segment of the population that's most likely to spend every extra dollar they get, right? So you're in the upper brackets, you get another dollar, okay, you're more likely to save it than you are to spend it. The further down you go, though, in terms of earned income, the more likely you are to spend the next dollar you have available. And so, you know, I think two things happen. One, you're more likely to spend this to begin with. But two, as you're free from some of that debt burden, potentially you feel a little bit better. And Joel, we had consumer sentiment data today, but I think this could be one more piece that helps consumers feel a little bit better and maybe, you know, give the economy a little bit of a kick in terms of, you know, growth potential that's not immediately captured in just the hard numbers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the next consumer sentiment report, how that affects consumer sentiment. Right now, they found that just the little bit that inflation has slowed down in the last month, that's affecting consumer sentiment. And you know, June and July consumer sentiment numbers were as low as they were, as pessimistic as back in the Great Recession. And now they the sentiment is up a little in August. So, and that's mostly because people feel a little bit better about where inflation's at.
You know, I think a good reminder this week that regardless of how we feel about where the markets are headed, and again, cautiously optimistic that we can get through some of the tough times that are currently there, get to a place where we can be back towards more, you know, more growth-oriented model. But as optimistic as we can be about the future, there's, you know, even sometimes just a 10-minute speech that can derail things short-term. And so, you know, I think critical that we stay balanced, critical that we remember the role that things like cash play at a time when, you know, we can get a little more for those safer investments. And most importantly, we appreciate you listening. We enjoy doing the program for you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.